You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to Dotto Tech. I am Steve Dotto, and I am glad you're joining us today for our second show. We survived week one, and now we're well into week two. You know, a federal election is well underway, so we're gonna kind of take a little bit of a political bent today. We're gonna talk about some of the issues that maybe should be on the agenda as we look to forming a new government. We're gonna be talking to OpenMedia.ca, who are all concerned with making sure that the internet is a democratic and open place. And they're the ones that stood up first and started to fight that rather contentious concept of metering our internet access that Bell and other ISPs put forward, where they wanted to charge us by the byte. So we're going to be talking to openmedia.ca about what maybe we can do and what we can put forward as an agenda for the election. And then on the complete other side, let's support the government a little bit. Let's pay our taxes, for goodness sakes. And the best way to pay your taxes is using online tools. We're going to be talking to the CRA about that. We've got lots of other fairly interesting things and some very fascinating topics today. Hey, Art. Art Factor, our producer. How are you doing, Art?
I'm doing great, Steve. You know, I'm just thinking, you know, I think that we would have more people voting. We're talking election. Mm-hmm. What if there was an iPhone app for voting? What do you think about that? Huh? We're a very lazy society.
I'm not so sure that the security folks would be comfortable with an iPhone app for voting. And you know what? The Apple's App Store might reject it. They might say, no, we don't like it. Nobody's going to like it.
How about if we just Twitter who we want to vote for?
You know,
would that work?
Well, there was a great article in the Globe and Mail about Twitter and the election, talking about, you know, can an election be won in 144 characters? And this is supposed to be the Twitter campaign. But of all of our potential leaders, do any of them seem cyber savvy to you?
No.
I guess, really... Yeah, they just don't strike me as the sort of person that is down with Android.
Well, Harper might have been like the audiovisual president in his high school, perhaps.
He might have been.
That's probably the closest.
And with that whole piano bit, he did shatter my preconceived notions of him. So he's the one that has the most range as far as I'm concerned. But somehow or other, just don't see Leighton out there, you know, pounding away on Twitter.
Probably not.
I had an interesting week. I just got back from Port Alberni. I was over speaking at a literacy conference in Port Alberni, and also to a teachers' conference over there. Had a great time, but an interesting conversation was launched as a result of being at a literacy conference. Of course, the main topic being literacy. And a lot of us don't think that literacy is an issue. Now, there was other speakers there that spoke about traditional literacy. Craig Anderson's senior VP at TD Bank, and their chief economist spoke about the cost of lack of literacy in our society and how much it actually costs our economy. And so he was talking from a traditional numeracy literacy perspective. And I spoke from a perspective of the fact that in order to be literate in today's society, you have to be functional within that society. And part of that functionality is understanding what's happening in the social media world, mm-hmm. online world. And so I broadened the concept a lot. But when we speak about even traditional literacy, by the standards that the world literacy people measure countries, do you realize that 5 in 10 adult Canadians are below the standard of literacy that's expected for a productive society?
Well, if you read any sort of text messages for anyone under the age of 16, you would have no clue what they're talking about. They have created a whole new dictionary of words.
And that's fair. I mean, in languages is an evolving thing. So we're not talking about texting and we're not talking about bad use of language. We're talking about functional literacy, being able to actually read directions and then be able to understand them and move ahead. And 5 in 10 Canadians, only 4 in 10 in British Columbia, but 6 in 10 adults in the Maritimes are beneath the standard for literacy. And economics, it's greatly more prevalent amongst the poor, and it's greatly more prevalent amongst those whose parents didn't consider literacy to be very important. But it does cost our economy billions of dollars a year in lost productivity and opportunity. And it was a far more profound problem than I was prepared to believe. It was.
I'm sure. I mean, the after school special we've all watched about the functioning adult who lives down the street, who you would think, you know, goes to work in a suit and drives a car, and then you find out later that guy had no idea what the street sign said, but he remembered to turn left at the white church, mm-hmm. turn right at the McDonald's to get to work.
And what you're saying is what my perception of literacy was as well. However, it's like eyesight. People who are functionally illiterate can still read. They can get by. It's just it's just how hard it is for them to do. And he created a great analogy. Craig Alexander created a great analogy. It's like the guy that needs glasses and is really, really nearsighted. And all of a sudden when he gets them, you know, he's been functioning fine without them. Mm-hmm. And then when he gets them, he realizes how bad it was. That's the issue that we deal with. People are getting by. They can read. They can do basic math, but not at the level that's really needed to function effectively in society. And it's once they get that at that level that suddenly realize, holy cow, how did I ever function before? It's like before we had Google. How did we ever function before we had Google? You know, and I shudder to think of what it was like. I actually don't want to think about it. I think it scares me. On a lighter note. Did you hear about the Twittering Cobra?
No. I'm a Twitterer. You can find me at Artfactora. That's my Twitter code.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you're as interesting as the Cobra. A Cobra escaped from New York City Jew. I'm at New York City Zoo. I don't think it was a Jewish cobra. I think it was a Gentile cobra. But it escaped from the New York City Zoo. And it caused a lot of panic in New York, you know, because they're going, oh, there's this juvenile Egyptian cobra that can kill you in like 5 seconds after it bites you, wandering around Manhattan, you know, kind of out partying.
Trying to catch a cab or something?
And so somebody, yeah.
It's not going to get anywhere.
It's hard because it can't hail a cab. But some guy got a hold of this idea, or some woman got a hold of this idea, and started to Twitter as the cobra. And they got 200,000 followers in almost no time. And a lot of, some of the tweets were, a lot of people are asking how I can tweet with no access to a computer or fingers. Ever heard of an iPhone? Duh. That was one of the tweets. Leaving Wall Street. You guys make my skin crawl was another one of the tweets.
Snarky snake.
Yeah. Taking the Sex and the City tour. I'm totally Samantha. my favorite was eating a cupcake. This is going straight to my hips. Oh, wait. I don't have hips. Yes. But good news is wildlife officials found said missing cobra, and it's safely back ensconced in the zoo.
Was it at a Yankees game?
No, it was in the building where they thought it would be. They found it somewhere in the building, but it is still twittering away. It keeps tweeting out.
When you got 200,000 followers, yeah, like keep that going.
It's still tweeting away. So now there's everybody's trying to figure out who the mystery cobra tweeter is, because it's an ongoing escalate. You can find it. Just search for the Twittering Cobra online, and you can start to follow. I bet you that of all of our listeners, more are actually going to start listening to the Twittering Cobra than you are.
One of my favorite Twitters is Drunk Hulk.
Drunk Hulk?
Yeah, like the Incredible Hulk. Yeah. Like Drunk Hulk. Yeah, he just, you'll have to check it out.
Well, the one that I followed first, which of course became a phenom, was Bleep My Dad Says.
Yeah.
And that was a hilarious series of tweets, because it was just these little condensed comments that were the real things that the father said. The TV series blows chunks compared to how funny the Twitter feed was.
I used to laugh out loud. Absolutely.
I used to laugh out loud at Bleep My Dad Says, but it was the real word, so you have to type in the whole word for My Dad Says. You know, that's enough of the fun stuff. Now it's time for us to have a chat about what's going on as far as access to the internet goes, and how important the internet is to our society moving forward as a country, as a nation. And we've got a kind of a watchdog group that's keeping an eye on what's happening online, making sure it remains open and democratic. Lindsay Pinto is the communications manager with openmedia.ca. Lindsay, thanks for coming in and chatting with us.
Thank you.
You guys are on quite the roll.
Yeah, it's going fairly well for us, actually.
You're about a three-year-old organization. And tell us about the genesis of the organization. Where did it start?
Well, my boss, the executive director, Steve Anderson, started the organization when he was in graduate school. He saw this convergence in the telecommunications market, and he saw the potential for participatory communications through the internet, and he wanted to do something to empower citizens to take advantage of this medium, this amazing medium that allows people to communicate on a level playing field and keep it out of the hands of big telecommunications companies that might stifle that.
Yes, and not that the big telecommunications companies in Canada have a history of stifling things or trying to take 100% control. So for the most part, Open Media came to my attention, and I think most Canadians' attention, what was it, October of 2010 or so?
November 1st.
Yeah. November of 2010, when Bell seems to be the lead bad guy in the picture, but all of the telcos were on board with them. They were all supporting this concept of metered billing, where they would charge us by the bit and byte and just basically take every nickel they could out of the consumer who wants to use the internet, and which would have... It would have been disastrous. So you started an online petition that just went viral.
Yeah. Essentially, we saw that that Bell was attempting to impose this universally, to impose usage-based billing not only on their own customers, but also on the customers of their independent competitors. Mm-hmm. The way the telecommunications industry is organized, they're able to do that. We saw this come out. We reacted pretty much immediately. Created a meter graphic in about 5 minutes, slapped up a petition, and then people started rolling in.
And you got some really good high-level support from the media. George Strombolopoulos jumped all over it right away. And so you got some people that were right in the center of Canadian culture just saying, hey, these guys are the place that we all have to migrate to have a voice in this.
Yeah, well, I think it tapped into a lot of people's existing frustrations with the telecommunications structure in Canada. People are being charged a lot. We're Canada's 23rd out of 25 of the OECD countries in terms of internet access
and really?
Affordability.
We're that low?
Yeah,
oh,
we're pretty low. Like,
I didn't realize
Korea is putting us to
much.
Shame.
Really?
Yeah.
See, there's so many things I thought we had it pretty good. Because I got a pretty fast internet connection that I think I pay a reasonable price for, but it's not competitive internationally.
Not compared to the rest of the world. And our digital economy is falling behind, and Canadians are realizing that. We don't have much rural and remote penetration. And this basically tapped into all of these concerns that people were having. And I think it just kind of exploded into this rush of, you know,
of
participatory
opinion.
Communication.
And it was. And for me, it came through Facebook. All of a sudden, people were posting this petition, and I went and I looked at it and I read about it, and I went, oh, this is something, and I reposted it on Facebook, and I saw entire communities moving. Was Facebook the main driving force, do you think, for a lot of the penetration you got?
We really started off when we got picked up on Reddit,
okay.
And then afterwards people picked it up on Facebook, and we had a Twitter version of the petition as well that was tweeting at Tony Clement to ask him to stop the meter on internet use. At the time, it was in a parliamentary appeal period. And people just spread the word, and this really grew as a grassroots movement, and people really made it their own, and it was incredible how far that went.
And all of a sudden, you find yourselves at the spear point of 470,000 engaged Canadians.
Yes.
No pressure. And now, lo and behold, they stopped the metering. Now, we won't spend too much time on it. They've stopped that, but they're doing something just as bad with a whole new billing system, which you will fight. We will deal with that. But way more exciting is the writ gets dropped. We have a federal election coming just as you grow into your fullness as being a voice. And now you're saying we have an opportunity now to actually get some really good points on the agenda in the federal election.
Yeah, we have almost 500,000 engaged Canadians who have basically taken the time to learn about this telecom issue, which most Canadians don't. I was surprised to see that pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And really get engaged in Canadian politics, in policy formation, wondering how participatory our media system is, and thus wondering how participatory our democracy system is. And we're about to tell them all to go out and vote.
Go and vote and what to vote for, possibly. So what are the issues that you, as an organization, want brought forward that you're going to ask your constituency now, this nearly 500,000 strong Canadians, what are you going to ask them to go out and push for?
We're essentially going to ask them to vote for the internet. We're going to have them engage with their candidates, ask those candidates what their stance is in terms of digital policy for Canada, ask for a broadband plan, ask for the CRTC to involve more citizen activity and more people from the public interest community. We're basically going to put all our cards on the table. And
you know what we're going to do? We're going to put all our cards on the table in a moment. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to return with more of you because we have a few more things that we have to discuss. I'm Steve Dotto, and you are tuned in to Dotto Tech.
You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
You gotta fight for your right to play.
Lindsay Pinto is the communications manager of openmedia.ca. They are, do you call yourselves a watchdog group?
Yes, I would.
It's a watchdog nonprofit, although you'd like people to send money to help support it, which we'll talk about at the end. We'll let you give a plea for funding at the end. But 470,000 Canadians have decided to partner with you in making the internet more democratic and making sure that it's a fabric of our society that all Canadians have access to. So you're doing something which I personally think is really important. Now, with the federal election looming, you're going to put the heat on the candidates.
Yes, we are. This is the perfect opportunity to get candidates on the record saying that if they are elected, they are going to take a stand for an open and affordable internet. They're going to include citizens more in public policy. And so we're getting people to visit votenet.ca to pledge that they will vote for the internet this election and ask their candidates to become pro-internet candidates.
And this is an interesting strategy, because basically you're getting individual Canadians to talk to the candidates and get them replying back to the individual Canadians saying, yes, I agree with your concerns about the internet. And then you're going to marshal those Canadians somewhere down the line to hold up those emails and say, wait a minute, you promised.
Pretty much. So we're going to have those candidates. They can sign up on openmedia.ca/candidate to become official endorsers of the pro-internet movement, and basically we're going to hold them to their promises. We're later going to go through and survey them and ask them whether they stand on very specific issues, and we can hold them to those stances afterwards.
You know, this resonates so well with me, just ironically the timing. Earlier this week I was in Port Alberni, as I was mentioning at the top of the show, giving a talk to a literacy conference, talking about literacy. And of course, there was the traditional aspect of literacy, but I was speaking of the fact that in a literate society, we have to be conversant in how that society works. And for us now, that's the internet. And if we're going to create a digital divide, if we don't make sure all Canadians have access to the internet, and that's really philosophically what you guys are all about.
Yeah, we want people to be able to engage with one another, to engage with policymakers. We want a level playing field for small businesses, and we want to allow families to be able to get online and see what the rest of the world is doing.
And it's a big story. It's not just about prices. It's about access. It's about making sure that we're getting high-speed internet into the rural communities, which was promised over a decade ago in the information superhighway. I can't even remember what the name of the program was, but something information superhighway was put forward. They said, we're going to cover that last mile. We're going to make sure we have high-speed access into all the small communities. How are we doing on that?
We're doing great. Of course, like big telecom, their interest is financial. So they are trying to find ways to save themselves money in doing that. And they're pushing solutions like satellite, which are kind of half measures. We want people to be able to have affordable access to the internet, no matter where they are. We want all Canadians to be able to participate.
And you've got great stories on your website. The stories that we all love of people who got the bill for $800 gazillion because they were accidentally using the internet on their phone and stuff like that.
No, it's terrible. One of our interns actually today came in and she said, Bell charged me $50 for going over my 6 o'clock on my phone, and they moved her 6 o'clock cutoff to a 9 o'clock cutoff, and she didn't know about it, and she's like, oh, well, now the time has come.
I have 400, me and 470,000 of my best friends are going to have a conversation.
Exactly.
So people can go to your site. They can go to either openmedia.ca or they can go to Vote Now.
Vote Net.
And if they want to support you, because you are a not-for-profit, so all of these things take a little bit of money, so you're happy to take a contribution should they choose to do so.
We'd love that. We'd love you to participate more. But you can always help us out. We are a very small organization with very limited funding.
Yes. But the first thing to do, sign up. Make sure that you're a member. Make sure you're tweaking the nose of the candidates in your jurisdiction, in your constituency, to make sure that they're on board, making sure the internet is for all Canadians.
neat.
Lindsay Pinto, communications manager from openmedia.ca. Coming right up, we're going to be taking a look at the world of cloud computing with Cedric Tetzel. Cedric Tetzel is the basically head of the computer department at London Drugs. Thanks for coming in, Cedric.
Thank you for inviting me.
You and I go back, I think, nearly 130 years in the computer business. This week is the birthday of the Osborne 1, 30th birthday, the Osborne 1. You remember that?
Yes. Osborne 1, the original Compaq, the Hyperion, the K-Pro, Columbia. Back memories. I won't call them good or bad. I'll leave that.
Well, if you carried it around an Osborne 1, they're bad because you still probably have stress injuries from carrying around that 24-pound behemoth. Let's talk about what's happening today. And one of the real beauties of computing today is this concept of cloud computing, where everything lives on the internet and you can access all of your data at all times in the cloud. But some manufacturers are taking that concept away from the great wide internet and bringing cloud computing into your home.
Yeah, see, currently the cloud computing fundamentally means you either rent space or you use free space on the internet on somebody else's server and access those files or applications.
The classic is like Google Docs, where you're basically storing all of your word processing documents and you'd have no idea where it's stored. It's just in the cloud.
Right. And what iOmega has done with the Store Center Cloud Edition is they've given you control of your own cloud. You own your own drive. All you need is a router at home or in the office, plug in a drive, run the software installation, and you're done. From that point on, you can access your files from anywhere through the internet. You can do backups. You can invite other users to share those files. The applications are...
How is this different from hosting your own web server?
Not a lot, because the different applications, if you, say, had vacation photographs that you post onto this drive, you can invite your entire family, friends, what have you, with a secured password to come in and watch a slideshow. In fact, if you want, you can dedicate certain portions of that cloud to automatically update your Facebook page. You can update your Flickr album. So it's a very easy way, transparent way for you to invite other people onto your cloud, share your files, and do all that sort of stuff.
But you not just have password ownership, now you have physical ownership of the media. That's got to be the appeal to most people.
Actually, you have physical ownership of the media. It's not residing in somebody else's building, and you don't have to pay a fee.
Yeah,
you own it forever.
That's right. That's a good point. Now, how much does this device cost?
It's about $200.
It's about $200. Now, have you you've looked at the software. Is it easy to install?
Installation is very easy. It's a little bit time consuming because the first time you have to load your files, and if you have big files, it takes a while to load up. But once you've done that, you're done.
And it plugs into your router. It plugs into a USB port on your router. How big a storage, how much storage do we have on it?
2 terabytes to start.
Oh, is that expandable? As if you need it expandable?
You can plug in. There's a USB port in the back. You can plug in other drives.
So you could plug in additional storage, but 2 terabytes is a huge amount of storage. And, you know, if you think about what we're doing here, I mean, even when Microsoft tried to make their home media server, a simple version of doing this kind of stuff, and it's never been easy to use. It's never been kind of plug and play and for non-real geeks to do. But you think iOmega might have caught the magic here?
This time they've done it right. Installation, by all accounts, have been very easy, and I've tried an earlier version of that on beta, and it was very easy to install.
So cloud computing doesn't have to be something that we lose total control of. This is a compelling concept. Thanks, Cedric.
You're welcome. Thank you.
FitTech is brought to you by Fit for Work, leaders in corporate health and wellness programs. Your fitness is our job.
Welcome back to Dottotech. Joining us this week and every week to come is PJ Wren. PJ Wren from Fit for Work. And the reason PJ is going to be a guest with us each week is technology is the root of all evil, at least physically, as far as
making us lazy and fat.
Well, I don't think it makes us lazy and fat, but here's the thing. Sitting down at the desk, getting concentrated on a task, we forget to move.
Yeah,
and
we do.
Usually we're not sitting in a very good position. We've got our arms akimbo, and our knees bent, and our hips, and our slouchingness, and our head tiltedness.
Yeah.
And then, but you know, you get focused on the task, and then.
Well, we spend most of our time at work, right?
Yeah.
So the best time to implement some activity is during work, and that's where we're seeing a lot of success.
And studies that you follow talk about the fact that chronic injuries that we basically do to ourselves at work cost companies millions of dollars.
Yeah. It's been reported that for every dollar that you spend on a wellness program, you're going to see $24 return.
Now, in a wellness program, what's a wellness program?
It could be as simple as a walk-run program, weekly lectures, adding healthier meals at the lunchroom, software to get your team to move so that they're pushing away from their desk every 30, 40 minutes. Could be bringing in a company to lead classes, or it could be just finding a cheerleader or someone who's fit and loves moving at work and making them the walking leader.
Now, that is a bit ironic. A lot of business managers want to see their team sitting on their butts, pounding away at the screen, getting work done. But you're saying that it's actually beneficial to get them away from the computer.
Get them away from the computer.
Get them moving.
Yeah. Otherwise, they're going to be taking time off from injuries. They're not going to be as inspired, as motivated. They're going to be dragging their butts in the afternoon. So I find that lunchtime work wellness programs are fantastic.
You know, I find it ironic that when I think back to my time in an office, the people who used to get away from the computer all the time, it was just one group.
Yeah.
The smokers.
The smoker.
They would get up, they would go outside, and they would have a cigarette.
So they were onto something.
But they also didn't seem to be the ones falling asleep. I was falling asleep in the afternoon. I guess it's not the nicotine. Maybe it was getting up and moving.
It's getting up and moving and getting some fresh air.
Yeah,
changing your environment. So, but there's really cool software, though. If you have a hard time getting your team to move, and I put a few links on the blog about it, three different variations of it. And you can try them out, and there's multiple users available for it, and it will literally make your team push away from their desk every 30, 40, 45 minutes, whatever you program it, and lead them through 2 or 3 minutes of stretching.
And that's all it takes. You know, stand
all
up, bend
takes.
Over and touch your toes.
Yeah, yeah. I see a time in the future where there's actually going to be treadmills behind desks. And they're already doing research of that back east, where they're walking at 1 point miles an hour. So it's really slow walking, but they're finding that the incidence of low back pain, neck pain, all of that are decreased dramatically. And guess what goes up? Productivity.
Productivity goes up.
Yep.
PJ Wren from Fit for Work is my guest. Thanks very much for joining. We'll see
Thanks,
you next
Steve.
Week.
Okay.
Brought to you by Fit for Work, making sluggish workplaces into invigorated workplaces. Visit us online at www.fitforwork.ca.
That's just great, PJ. Thanks. And take care. PJ, you left your... Oh, geez. She left a bag of O. Henry's here. Is O. Henry the king of the chocolate bars to you, Art?
Not to me, no.
Oh, what's yours?
Anything Ferrero.
Oh.
The Bueno, the Kinder Eggs.
Really?
Yeah.
The Kinder Eggs chocolate is like bizarre.
No, it's delicious.
Oh, okay. I guess it's when you're... I used to think O. Henry was, but now I crave other things. Okay, every once in a while I want a crunchy with whatever that foam insulation is.
Oh,
and
yeah. So,
yeah, and...
A bit of salt and sugar.
And then I had one of the thick Kit Kats the other day, and that's a whole different world when you don't have to share it. It's a whole different world when it's not designed for sharing. That's all I'm saying.
PJ is going to be very angry with you when she's listening.
Well,
to
Well, I'm going to bring the O. Henry to her. I'll deliver it to her. We should let people know about the website and the Facebook page. There are ways we like you to communicate with us. Let us know what you think about the show. Let us know what you want to hear on the show. Comments, questions for the guests. We're always going to post the stories that are coming up. So drop by dottotech.com, and there you can just you can drop us an email. There's a contact link there. As well, the Facebook fan page. I don't like the word fan page, but that's Facebook. They've made it a fan page. So I guess we just have to accept the fact that it's a fan page. It's at facebook.com/dottotech. And there you can come and please click like. You like me. But then what it does is it puts us in your feed so that when I'm letting you know who's coming up on the show or when there's comments or questions, we'll be part of your Facebook feed. And that's just a great way to do things. So please, dottotech.com. Facebook.com/dottotech. Those are the places I want you to visit.
MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Welcome back to Dottotech, and it is time for App of the Week. And Chris Miller from MacStation joins me. The App Store and the whole app concept is exploded, but people are a little bit confused. So we're going to spend a little bit of time right off the top today talking about apps and where we find them, because Apple kind of started this whole revolution with iTunes and with the ability to be able to download applications from iTunes in the iTunes App Store. And I believe that it exploded far beyond Apple's expectations of what the App Store would become. Do you concur?
No, I actually think knew exactly what they were doing when they went for it.
There's no way.
Oh, yeah.
There is no way they knew exactly what was going to happen because it's become enormous. Now, not only is it enormous, the place you go to download all of your apps for your iPod or your iPhone or your iPad, but now they've, when you update your Mac, you get this new menu bar item that says, or dock item that says App Store. And now they're selling me all sorts of applications for my computer through their App Store. And it's pretty cool. A lot of them are those really inexpensive $2 and $3 apps that we expect from that we expect in the mobility world. But there's also some fully featured. I bought my accounting software through the App Store. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's definitely grown well beyond anything that I expected.
Well, I mean, this was always the way that it was going to go. I mean, PC users or some Mac gamers would be familiar with Steam, which allows mm-hmm. you to simply do a direct download. And the nice part is that you don't have a disk to lose. You don't have a code you have to keep in a notebook somewhere. And if the computer just destroys itself, you can always get your applications back.
Yeah, it's a responsible way to go in a variety of ways. A, if you're downloading software, real applications to your computer, you don't have trees being chopped down, you don't have manufacturing of disks, you don't have it being shipped, you don't have it sitting on store shelves and taking up space and being lit and being heated. There's a lot of good to it. Retailers don't like it that much because they aren't the source people come to buy software as much anymore. Nevertheless, they can still provide expertise in other services. But it is a new world model as far as selling of applications go. And I'm pretty sure we're going to see it expand into all of the other operating systems as well.
So developers are just loving it.
Oh, of course.
Because straight direct consumer relation. You don't need to go through brick and mortar.
Way back in the day, I spent a lot of time in distribution. I spent a time distributing a multimedia application. It was an animation package. And the amount of energy and time that we spent in building our packaging, in getting it into distributors' hands, and the cost of getting it out there from our manufacturing in Hong Kong or in Asia, where we'd have it manufactured because that was where it was cheapest for printing and pressing, then shipping it across and the delays. Now you finish an application on Tuesday and it can be on consumers' computers on Wednesday. It is tremendous.
It's the power of systems, power of networks.
Yeah, network is the computer. Who said that? Let's just finish things off by just picking out the thing that caught your attention. Here are one app that caught your attention. The app that caught my attention is an app on the computer. A little one, I think it's like $4. It's called Clipan or something along that line. It's on my blog. It is a multi-clipboard. Think about this for a second. You know how you copy and paste? And if you're gathering a whole bunch of data together, you got to copy and paste, copy and paste, copy and paste. It stores all of your copies so you don't have to paste. You can create a library of copies and like a clipbook of all of your different copies, and then you can go and you can organize them, and then you can paste them one at a time. You can reference them later. You can search on them. So you never have to throw away your clippings. And so you say, wait a minute, I know that address. I clipped it. And you can go back 3 days later and find that address in your history, and then you don't have to go back to the website, clip it, and copy it and paste it again. It's Clipan. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it is Coolpin as far as I'm concerned.
That is cool.
Yes. What's yours?
Mine is a phone app.
Okay.
Anybody who knows me, my iPhone 4 is always in my back pocket, lives there. It's called Heytel. It's a free app. It's kind of like a walkie-talkie app. All you have to do is you push a button, you record your statement, you pick your contact, and it immediately beams to them if they have got the same app. So you end up having a voice. It's text messaging without all that, you know, typing.
Without the text.
Yeah. So it's a walkie-talkie, but at your leisure, because you don't need to hear it right away. It just sends you a blunk, just like any other text or email. And you've got a little voice message sitting from there. A friend of mine introduced me to it, been using it ever since.
Both of these will be listed in our App of the Week blog. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
That's Chris Miller from Mac Station. We're going to return with more Dottotech in just a few seconds.
Mac Tech is brought to you by Mac Station, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. Mac Station. Who said business and pleasure don't mix? Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
April is a wonderful time of year for Canadians. Spring is starting to sprout all over the country, or at least here in the West. Out in Ontario, they still have snow flying. But the other great thing about spring is it's tax time. It's the time that we get to file all of our taxes. John Marquis joins me. He's the Assistant Director of the Business Returns Division from the Surrey Tax Center. And we're going to talk about online tax filing, which is actually one of my favorite subjects. Thanks for coming in, John.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I am a big fan of what we've done e-government-wise in this country. Actually, most Canadians don't know how much e-government we've put in place. We're actually a pretty forward-thinking country as far as creating a forum for citizenry to communicate with our government.
Yes, I agree. We have we have quite a number of e-services available to Canadians to utilize to file their taxes.
Yeah, and that's really the beginning of the whole story as far as I'm concerned is it's a win-win situation when we start thinking about online tax filing. So let's just first of all kind of boil back and talk about, because some people aren't ready to do their online filing. You guys aren't going away from paper filing anytime soon. If they don't want to drink the Kool-Aid with us, they can still file by paper. But basically there's three ways that people file today. There's net filing, there's the e-filing, and then you still have telefiling.
We still have telefile. You can still use the telephone for some simple tax returns and file them over the telephone, but it's a very low take-up for that.
So the other two, e-filing and net filing, are really divided amongst people who do their own returns and people who have a professional do their returns for them, right?
That's exactly it. E-file is used by the tax preparer community, and when they're doing the return for an individual, they use their own software and then file it over the internet directly with us.
Okay. And then for the rest of us, net filing is the way to go. And that allows us to either buy a piece of software off store shelves or even more simply, just go online, register with a service and start to fill out our tax return ourselves.
It's as simple as that. It's a great service to use.
Canadians still have one question always that comes up when they start talking about online filing. They say, what about security? How safe is my data? Can you speak to that?
It's absolutely secure and confidential. It's a very good service. We have great accuracy. You get a fast refund, but we have no problems with the security and confidentiality because it's really of utmost importance for us.
And that's something that you really work. I mean, we see you for this 3 or 4 month period, but you work on this year round, getting all of the providers of the software in line as far as their security, in line as far as the accuracy of their software, in line as far as compliance goes. You work with them on almost a year round basis, making sure that whole process works properly.
We do have a division that does work with them, but we certify that the software is compatible with our systems,
mm-hmm.
and that's really what's important. And then we let them use the NetFile service mm-hmm. to file the actual returns.
So the process that the average person goes through is you can start, a good place to start is at CRA's website.
Absolutely. www.cra.gc.ca. We have all sorts of information to help the average Canadian file their income tax return and benefit returns.
And in there you will find, if you're going to be doing an online tax form, you're going to find all of the services that are registered with you that you guys certify as being accurate and in compliance. So you can choose any of those services right from that point there, and then you can start to file your return. Now, the cool thing about net filing that I find is it's a gentle process, if we can think of it that way, because you don't actually pay any money until you're at the very end stage. You can actually, over a period of days or weeks, complete your return by returning to your file from time to time as you gather the necessary data. And you can, so it's not that arduous task of sitting down and grinding through it that I used to think of as my tax return. The fact that you can return, you can kind of work your way through, find that you're missing one piece of information, save, go away, come back the next day and return and work on it again. That's a really good part of the process.
Yeah, definitely a benefit from having the electronic preparation. And certainly our systems just, take that. Once you are ready to file, our system, our NetFile system is usable to have it processed very quickly. You'll get your refund quite fast.
Yeah, at the end of the day. And as you're going through the process, if you're wondering about the differences between the software, this is something that I can speak to, is the fact that the real difference between the software is the interview format, is how they kind of coerce the numbers out of you and guide you and coach you through the process of filling out your tax return and the what-if scenarios that you can play depending on the software that you use and that sort of stuff. So once you've decided on the software, you complete your return, and then in most cases, places you pay. Some of them actually offer, depending on how much your level of income is, they might offer you a free return. You file your return. But that's really just the start of where our relationship, our new and better relationship with CRA can start, because there are other services that electronically are available to us that can ease the rest of our year with you as well. Let's start with my account, talking about my account, because a lot of Canadians don't know that they can actually open an account and manage a lot of their communication with CRA through my account.
Absolutely. It's a secure electronic service. You can review your personal income tax and benefits data. You can change your return or your address. You can authorize a representative, which is a really important feature.
Yeah.
And you can register a formal dispute or even set up direct deposit. So it allows you to do so much.
And you've hit on two other online services that are available to the average person, which I think are just excellent because they streamline the process. First of all, with my account, you create a direct dialogue with CRA on your account, and you have all the information that you need at your fingertips, sort of, in order to track your return, see the status of where you are as far as it, and then if you have any disagreements, to in order a proper forum in which to say, well, I think I should be getting this, don't you think? And it's a civilized way as opposed to shouting into the telephone, I guess, of doing that process. But for those of us who have a representative, who have an accounting firm that does it, and that's for some individuals, but a lot of small businesses. The represent a client service is awesome. It's where you authorize an accounting firm or a professional to act on your behalf. And CRA will then communicate with them directly because you've given them permission, which I can tell you is a boon for the average citizen. Not having the phone call from CRA saying, you know, we've got a question about this part of your ongoing business. And most of us just at that point seize up and look for a hole to crawl into. Our accountants don't do that. They know how to talk your language, and it's a benefit to us all.
Definitely. We have a couple of ways that you can sign up, actually. It's a form, a T1013 authorized representative form. You can get that off of our website as well. Send it in to us, and your accountant or any authorized rep will be able to discuss your information. But the confidentiality of the information is really what's key for us, and we want to make sure that the people are authorized appropriately to talk to us about that, or you can sign up through my account. Very simple, very fast way to get this information.
The other thing that you mentioned was the direct deposit. And direct deposit is the other side of the coin of net filing, which I think about, which is how much money we save ourselves as a nation by electronically communicating with our government. By net filing instead of paper filing, we save an inordinate amount of money on the processing of the tax return. If you sign up just one time for direct deposit with the government, all the checks that you write now, you can direct deposit to us, which again saves us, I don't know how many millions of dollars it must save, but the cost of doing an online transaction versus writing a check, mailing the check, the environmental impact of that, it's staggering how effective it is and how cost effective it is to have a citizen, just one citizen, sign up for direct deposit. And the more that do it, it just makes the whole system run better.
Absolutely. It's so much more effective, cost effective, both from a labor perspective and money perspective. But you can also get your refunds so much quicker. Or if you're getting your various tax credits like the GST credit, the Canada Child Tax Benefit, or the Universal Child Care Benefit, those all come directly into your account once you sign up for direct deposit.
That is the way to go. And I know because of the rules that the government has in place, you can't put big starbursts up on your website saying, this is good for you, this is good for us. But it is good for you, it's good for us, it's good for everybody if you sign up for this. Are Canadians, by and large, accepting the whole online communication with you? Are they signing up, and are they e-filing in the numbers that you were hoping?
Absolutely. It goes up every year, and currently we're at about 71% of people filing are choosing to electronically file.
71%. So we got 29% that we got to get with the program.
Yes. Just a few years ago, it was 55%. So we've actually moved quite a ways in the last 4 years.
Well, I think the number that we should be shooting for is 100. That's just my opinion. Lastly, okay, let's get some practical advice out to people. What are the people that accept the returns, what are the deductions that people most miss?
Well, actually, there's a number of tax credits that people can use and they don't always pick up on. And some of them are like the Children's Fitness Tax Credit. There's a non-refundable tax credit up to $75 based on eligible fitness expenses for each child under 16. There's another one, first-time homebuyers tax credit, a non-refundable tax credit of up to $750 for purchasing a qualifying home. There's even a public transit tax credit, and that's a non-refundable credit that helps you helps those that are using public transit. There's also one that's really interesting, a tradesperson tools deduction. Not everyone knows about this. Tradespeople can deduct from their income part of the cost of tools purchased throughout the year.
Oh, wow. So we are going to have links to the sites that we talked about in the CRA website up on our site. I have to thank John Marquis for coming in today. We appreciate your time, and be gentle with me this year if you happen to see a daughter return across your desk.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
We are going to take a break and return with more Dottotech in just a few minutes.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Welcome back to Dottotech. So, friend of mine's daughter goes to Mexico. No cell service, but they have Wi-Fi service. Her daughter gets to Mexico. Within a few minutes, she's talking FaceTime to mom. Mom knows she's okay. Chris Miller from MacStation joins me. Let's talk FaceTime.
FaceTime is cool.
FaceTime is cooler than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Because it works so well. They've really done some Mojo compression stuff on this.
Now, the software is just fantastic, and especially the way that it interfaces with all of your devices. My favorite part, my single favorite part of the entire one is, let's say all you have in terms of FaceTime machines is a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
You got a MacBook sitting in front of you, like so many people do. And I want to FaceTime call you, and you don't have that app active. If I call the email address that you have attached with your FaceTime account, it activates the program on your computer for you and starts ringing, just like Skype would or anything else.
So
just
it
like
reaches
a phone
out and touches you.
Does a little bit.
Let's get the bad news out of the way first, because all our Windows listeners are right now going, what about us? Can we have FaceTime too?
I'm afraid not. You got to come to our side.
You got to come to the Mac side. And do you anticipate FaceTime will be available in Windows anytime soon?
Well, I tell you what, the last time me and Steve had a conversation about it, he didn't bring it up.
He didn't bring it up. And, you know, with some of these apps like this that are way out cool, Apple doesn't try and bring them across. They don't see the value in bringing them across. We never saw the previous Apple Chat application move across into Windows. People could kludge it in some ways, mm-hmm. but it never worked. So if you are lucky enough to live in a Mac universe, FaceTime it works on all of your applications. Over Wi-Fi networks, it can also work over – no, it doesn't work over the –
It's still limited on 3G. I believe that still has to do with the amount of data compression going around.
And I'm not sure you'd want to use it for that anyways. But if you do – if you are in a hybrid world, you can get some of the same functionality out of using Skype and using the video on Skype.
Yeah, if you have an iPod Touch, a current iPod Touch, it'll work mm-hmm. just fine on that. I mean, almost everybody's kid seems to have that. If you have a MacBook, if somebody's got an iPhone, you're good.
Yeah, you're good to go with Skype. But if you have a choice – FaceTime, the quality of video, that much better.
Oh, yeah.
Quality of audio, that much better.
Oh, yeah.
Cool factor, that much more.
Oh, yeah.
FaceTime. Chris Miller from MacStation. Drop by our website, check out his blog. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation. Book a one-on-one training with our Apple specialists or sign up for one of our free workshops. Get the most out of your Mac with MacStation. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
So lots of little tidbits on the web this week, Art. Did you know that Facebook actually kicks 20,000 kids off a day for lying about their age?
I always feel I have nieces and nephews, and slowly but surely they seem to be jumping on Facebook. Some a little too early for myself, but I guess it's kind of a birthday present.
Well, the rules are 13 years old, and so lots of kids are coming on much younger, and Facebook is just kicking them off. It's a good thing Facebook doesn't kick all people off for lying about their age. That's all I'm saying. You know who I'm talking about.
I'm getting to that age where I have to start hiding the year I was born to.
Are you?
Well, I look young.
Well, it doesn't matter. The great line is if you didn't know how old you were, how old would you be? Think about that.
I'd get kicked off of Facebook for sure.
20,000 kids a day being kicked off Facebook, and lots of little Facebook tidbits flowing off the net. There was a teacher suspended down in the States because she posted on her Facebook page that she was a teaching soon-to-be criminals, future criminals. She was basically the warden for future criminals. She wasn't impressed with her class. So instead of just complaining to her significant other or her friends over a beer, she posts on Facebook that her grade ones are future criminals. And surprise, surprise, she got suspended.
Does she not forget? I don't understand those people who Twitter and Facebook status updates. And do they forget that it's not that it's public and that anyone can see it?
Inside voice and outside voice. We need those. We need those.
Professionalism is what.
And apparently, we need to tell everybody. There's an interesting story. The American Academy of Pediatrics has issued a warning about children in social media sites. And when we're talking social media sites today, I mean, really, we're talking Facebook. And they've coined a new term. It's called Facebook depression. Hmm. And it's kids that spend too much time on Facebook. And it's defined as depression that develops when preteens and teens spend a great deal of time on social media sites such as Facebook and then begin to exhibit classic symptoms of depression. Now, what they don't tell us is what is it about Facebook that's depressing them. And I have a question. I think if a kid's going to get depressed, they're probably going to get – it's not due to Facebook. I mean, this is kind of blaming the messenger. Mm-hmm. You know, they're vulnerable to that anyways. Facebook – one of the things that I think my generation doesn't necessarily always get about Facebook is it's a vibrant communication medium, but it's just a new communication tool. It's neither good nor bad. It's just kind of the way that we've moved ahead. And kids are comfortable communicating in that metaphor. We're not necessarily quite as comfortable, so we tend to put a label on it. I'm not sure Facebook depression is any different than any other depression. Being an adolescent can be pretty depressing at times.
I think what Facebook does is just show what the 10% of the world is actually doing outside, and then the 90% is watching what those 10% are doing.
Mm.
Right? I mean, I am guilty of sitting and for hours going through people's pictures and going, wow, that person went to Mexico. That would be awesome.
And then you get depressed because you don't get to go to Mexico.
Exactly.
So you're suffering Facebook depression.
A little bit.
So apparently, well over 20% of kids between the ages of 2 and 5 can play with smartphones. They can just pick up a phone and use it. And we know this. And I imagine that number of parents show bad judgment by letting a 2 to 5 year old touch their smartphone because it could end up in the mouth or in the toilet or anywhere else. Mm. But less than half that number can actually tie their shoes.
Velcro. That's my answer.
Technology. It's an advance, yeah. But it is easier to use a smartphone than tie your shoes.
Too bad there isn't an app for tying your shoes.
It is.
That would solve everyone's problem, wouldn't it?
Well, there's probably an app to teach you how to tie your shoes. That would work. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, it's Happy Birthday, Osborne 1. You 24-pound piece of plastic and metal with a staggering 5-inch monochrome CRT display. So the first Osborne 1, it was released April 3rd, 1981, and at the West Coast Computer Fair in San Francisco. It had a 4 megahertz processor, 2 single-sided floppy disks, 64K of RAM, and 5-inch monochrome display, and it was, guess how much money?
I'm scared to think.
It was $1,795, and it weighed 24 pounds. And that was state of the art. It had a whole bunch of built-in applications, and geeks of the world celebrated. That was more than something. You know, we've got great stuff lined up for next week's show. But in the spirit of openmedia.ca, I think we should let our listeners have a say. So here's the things I'm thinking about. I'm going to post these online. Comment with what stories you like. And you can tell me, too, what stories you're interested in art. Here's some that I'm thinking about.
Okay.
The first one is really for you. I'm thinking about doing online dating.
Why do you, I've become the sad single guy on this show. Well, I guess if we had to choose between the two.
If we had to choose between you and I being the sad single guy, who is it?
It'll be me.
So you've been chosen the sad single guy on the show. It could work out well for you. We had a cameraman on the TV show who we put up online and did an online dating feature on, and he got dates.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I also want to talk about outsourcing, using the internet for finding knowledge workers. It's a fascinating topic. It's something we're going to cover. Is it something you want soon? Facebook, is it good or bad? We should talk about the basics. So that's another topic that I'm considering for next week. E-book readers.
E-books.
Yeah, you like the e-book story?
There are definitely a hot button issue between book lovers.
Yes, and GPS for summer travels, finding your way around our great province, the province of BC, with GPSs and some of your different options. So those are the choices that I'm going to put up online, and you let me know which story you want. And there's a good chance that it'll appear next week. And if not, it'll be just something that I choose. Online dating, outsourcing, Facebook, ebooks, or GPS. What's your choice, Art?
Well, I'm a narcissist, so I'll go with online dating.
I have a funny hunch online dating might be right up there. Thanks to our guest, John Marquis of CRA, Cedric Teitzel, Lindsay Pinto. We had a great show. Drop by the website. Let us know what you thought. If you have some time, definitely let us know what show you want to see or what topics you want to see next week. And with that, on behalf of Art, I'm Steve. Thanks for tuning in.
Good night.